Hello, and you are listening to I'm a Diva podcast, a podcast dedicated to promoting our female creatives in the music industry. So if you are any form of creator, a dedicated participant in the music industry, then we are here to promote you, to share your story, to share your challenges, and to grow together, and to have some fun along the way, and learn a thing or two. You are listening to I'm a Diva podcast. I'm a GD. I'm a female rapper in the music industry, going to develop my career and facing challenges and noticing how females are underrepresented. This is why I decided to create this podcast for all of you to listen to and to promote our wonderful females and to be able to connect with others and learn from each other. So I welcome you to I'm a Diva podcast.
Hello, and you're listening to I'm a Diva podcast. This is your talk show host, AGV, and we're back with another wonderful episode. This is season 2, episode 6. And today we're talking to Neve Dunphy. She is a 23-year-old university student, blogger, podcaster, former international athlete in the Paralympic sport of Bocha, as well as living independently with cerebral palsy. Her blog, Gigability, looks at concerts from the perspective of a wheelchair user, for example, toileting facilities, view, and ease of access, and hope to educate venues on how to be more accessible. Irish Music Gems, the podcast, originally came from a conversion of a radio show she does with the same name. Basically, she had the label Beardfire Music artist Zoe Clark on a live radio show with her and Ronan Healy from Beardfire Music, offering their artists to her, and then converted the idea into a podcast. The whole intention is to promote and showcase the best of Irish music talent. So hi, Neve, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for coming on.
Hi, how are you?
How are you yourself? How are you getting on during the lockdown? How have you been dealing with everything?
Not too bad. I'm quite chilled now because I've got some time off college. I have to finish an exam, so I can actually just chill and do my own thing for a bit, which is nice, but it's quite hectic working when you sit do all stuff from online for university.
Yeah, I can only imagine. It's been a tough year for anybody that has to do any form of studies online, you know, especially if you're not used to it or you're not that type of learner. Would you consider yourself kind of more a hands-on learner? You're studying digital marketing, aren't you?
Yeah.
Great.
I'm studying digital marketing in TU Dublin, Talacampus, on Torger.
Okay, so what type of learner? Would you be a kinesthetic learner? Would you be more oral, like visual? What would you consider yourself?
So, because I have cerebral palsy, that affects my hand function. So, I can't write. So, say for example, if I'm doing lectures, I'll have a note taker that'll take my notes for me. So, generally, a lot of my like studying and prep would usually come from like reading stuff over and over, because you're very generally people would write stuff down to learn stuff, because I can't to kind of adapt your ways of learning.
Thank you for that. I actually thought this would be a very cool and special edition episode to have you on, because I think it's a subject that I don't think is spoken enough about. And I think a lot of times, not necessarily that people don't want to learn about it, it's just, you know, it's kind of like, you know, it's nice to bring up the conversation once again in a while for people who don't really know much about it. So I think the whole kind of perspective of you know, someone who uses a wheelchair, you know, in terms of like the angle in music venues, and kind of how can music venues make, you know, things better for people with disabilities. So thank you so much for coming on to share with us. I'd like to open up the episode with an extraction from the Irish Times article, which is called Let Me In, Dublin's Not an Easy Place to Be a Gig-Goer with a Disability, by Louise Bruton. And she says, years go by and very little changes. It's frustrating when you see the totally accessible tripod and Crodaddy complex rot away at Harcourt Street, or when you see venues pumping huge amounts of money into ever-expanding smoking areas instead of putting in an accessible bathroom. What's more annoying is that this conversation never ends, and it feels like no one is really listening. Building regulations are tricky to navigate, and there's no point in boycotting inaccessible venues. But musicians, promoters, and DJs can take action if they want to make access a priority. As the DIY events have proved, they don't always have to use traditional venues. I can bang on and on about this, but they're only ones who can shut me up. So also the journal says, so many venues, wheelchair bathrooms won't have sanitary bins, soaps, or mirrors. They barely have a working lock. So this is the title of the article. Louise Bruton is an avid gig-goer, journalist, and activist who runs the Legless in Dublin website, which reviews locations based on their accessibility to wheelchair users like her. She said that there can be a feeling that when a lot of venues do one thing for access, they think that's it. It's a box ticked, and they don't upgrade or move along with the times. Building regulations locations can prevent some locations from making major changes, but Bruton says she feels a lot of the time that is a line that they can hide behind. But there are ways and means. I just think there can sometimes be ramshackle facilities put in, which can be more damaging than nothing at all, she said. She also said this ADI survey shows we need to do more and think about access as thinking about a wheelchair ramp. People need to think about what access really means and how poor access can affect someone's mental health. ADI Arts and Disabilities Ireland isn't just for audience members, it's for performers too. It wants to ensure that barriers for people are dismantled so that people with disabilities living in Ireland can experience the arts without hindrance of any kind. So my question to you, Niamh, today, how can venues, DJs and promoters be better and catch up with the times in terms of disability and kind of the access of people with disability in the arts?
I think, to be honest, it's just educating themselves about what can actually be done is the thing, really, to be honest. Because take, for example, the link that I sent you about the changing place of facilities. Mm-hmm. So a lot of venues and general buildings will think that, oh, I've got a wheelchair toilet with grab rails and ease to be able to transfer on and off of for a wheelchair user, but if you're like me and have cerebral palsy, I can't transfer. So it means that if I go to a concert, I either need to bring somebody that can lift me onto the toilet, mm-hmm. or I have to wear incontinence wear, mm-hmm. which I wouldn't need to do otherwise.
Yeah.
So basically, it's about not putting just the simple things in that can tick a box. So these changing place facilities have their regular wheelchair toilet, but as well as that, they have a ceiling track hoist to assist the wheelchair user to place it on the toilet, a changing bed if that's needed. There's so many more angles to look at.
Yeah.
It's not as simple as looking at the standard ways of living, because disability is more complex than that as we contribute in society.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. That's a good point to make. Now, Olympia Theatre and Tree Arena are known to be kind of sufficient at facilitating people with disabilities, from what I gathered from my research. Yeah. But want to know, where has been the best venues in terms of wheelchair access and trained staff communication, and also your worst experiences from the moment of purchasing the ticket to the night of the venue entry?
To be honest, I haven't had anything that I've actually experienced most of the time. Anywhere that I've gone has been good.
Where have you gone? Can you give me some names?
Well, I've spent most of my life going to concerts. So where have I gone to? Here, I've been to the Olympia Tree Arena, Workman's Club. Haven't been to Whelan's yet, but I will be going there for something eventually with COVID. The Academy was quite good. Mm-hmm. That's just off the top of my head. And then in terms of away from Ireland in the UK, I've been to Wembley as well. Mm-hmm. And then for outdoor gigs, I've been to Marley Park, Phoenix Park, and the RDS. I could be missing one more, I can't remember. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I've been to quite a wide spread of places. So in terms of the really good accessible venues, I would say Olympia is actually one of the best ones, mm-hmm. because they give the wheelchair users two options: being at the barrier and integrated with everybody else in the standing area, mm-hmm. or you can go in like a glass box kind of thing,
yeah.
that raises itself if you prefer to be away from all the crowds for anxiety and stuff. But they only have 4 wheelchair accessible.
Yeah. Yeah, I read about that there's very limited amount of spaces available. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's a really good point to make. And as well, one thing I read about is people with disabilities a lot of times do end up going to the concerts and stuff, and people are normally kind of rushing in and rushing out with, you know, in terms of their, you know, parking and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And there was a big issue with kind of saying, like, if somebody parks too close to you, that you can't really get in. So it's like people being unaware that you need extra space, yeah. being left in between. Has that happened to you for being able to access in and out of your car?
To be honest, like, the only time that tends to happen is if, say, we go to an outdoor gig in the summer and there's a taxi trying to get up. Because mm-hmm. everyone's coming out, you kind of get caught in, like, a bottleneck of people yeah. that just won't move out of the way.
Yeah.
Do you get me?
Yeah. And do you feel like you have social anxiety with kind of crowds as well, or are you okay and comfortable with them?
I think inside I'm fine, but outdoor, like festivals and things where people have to be drinking, having a good time and getting very messy, and like people just act a bit weird.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
it's like, it's more the physical perception of a wheelchair when people are drunk. They get like, I'll either get like weird questions asked me, being told I'm an inspiration for being out in public,
yeah.
all this kind of strange stuff. And you're like, how am I? I know I don't mean harm by it, but it's like, I'm living my life as equally as you do. What's different about that?
Yeah, I understand. Now, where is your favorite position of the venue to get the best experience, view-wise and sound-wise? What should venue owners or promoters keep in mind when choosing best positions in venue for wheelchair users, components-wise? Now, you mentioned the whole part about, like, is it entry arena about the kind of the choice of being in a kind of a glass box and then being kind of part of
Olympia.
Yeah. So, do you think that's kind of the gist of it? But as you know, different venues kind of vary. So what kind of components do you look for in kind of having the best experience for you? Like, what's the most important things to take into consideration for promoters and venue owners?
I think there should be more integration with the overall crowd, because if you go to Tree Arena, basically what happens is there's like a balcony that goes right around and it's for like the wheelchair spots for, say, me and whoever I bring with me to sit in that spot. Now, you can see everything. Like, it's actually quite good. You're up quite high, but it's pushed very far back. And sometimes when people stand up at the end of a concert.
Yeah.
And they're jumping around and stuff. You can't see.
Yeah.
Now, I'm lucky that I have a riser on my chair so I can rise above people's heads. But a little kid wouldn't have the option to do that. And it might actually distress them a little bit. Do you know what I mean?
And especially when they're young, you know, at early age, you know, it's not something you should be experiencing at a young age that you're going to know. It's kind of like a thing that gets in the way of you having the full experience.
Yeah, I'm just thinking of me as a young kid. Like, it doesn't ruin the experience very, but it makes you very conscious of as to what it's going to be like.
Yes, exactly. Thank you. So in terms of kind of like, are there grants available for upgrading venues? Do you know, not considering preservation orders of like buildings, but, you know, do you have any knowledge of that? What funds are allocated a year? Do you know anything about that?
That's something I'm not actually sure about. That's something I've never looked into myself, and I should.
Yeah, it'd be something interesting to look into in terms of kind of like for venue owners to kind of be aware that, you know, what funds are available for them to kind of upgrade a venue to, or improve a venue that they already have, improving some of the facilities, and how much money is allocated a year, you know, by the government. So that's actually an interesting question to kind of think about. It's something I was thinking about as well. Yeah, so in terms of kind of regular festival goers and gig goers ourselves, you know, everyday people, what can we do to kind of support people with disability coming to a gig, coming to a festival, to help kind of facilitate or like support in you guys having the best experience that you can? What can we do as regular people on everyday going to a gig, help you guys?
I'm gonna speak to you as a musician, because not a lot of our musician friends would probably listen to this. So in terms of for you yourself, because now you're sending your friend that goes to your gigs that's disabled, think about what access particular venues can offer and see do you find it adequate for a person that would come to your gig, and then they've not moved. Give the venues that have the accessibility the booking for your gig rather than the ones that don't. Do you get me?
Yeah.
So then it's including everybody in the wider community, and you're giving more money to the venue for being more inclusive, which will encourage them to do more in the long run as well.
Yeah, that's a good point to make. And that's something I was thinking about as well from my perspective. And I do think, like, you know, to a certain extent, it can be challenging, especially for an artist starting out to get gigs to begin with, or even pay gigs. Yeah. So do you know, there are components that need to be or taken into account for an artist as well in kind of their career progression. But then at the same time, what I think is, I was thinking would be a good suggestion, when a promoter posts an event about you, to actually request, you know, as an artist on your behalf, to actually request putting up an inclusion section in the description of the event to kind of say, will the event be wheelchair accessible? Because what I gathered from my research as well is that you find a lot of frustration, I'm guessing, from the fact that you're guessing and not really being sure whether the venue is accessible or not, or what facilities are available. Do you think that that's something?
Oftentimes, if it's a venue that I'm not familiar with, I'll need to ring and ask exactly what their accessibility components are. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah.
So for example, when we went to the Workman's Club, they didn't have an accessible toilet, so I had to go to the hotel beside it to go to the toilet.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's a bit of a hassle. Mm. And so, I mean that takes up a lot of the time of your night as well, when you think about it.
That could have changed since, I don't know, that was 2 years ago.
Yeah, they have been doing some renovations as far as I know, but I don't know what type of renovations they've been doing on the workmen, so.
Yeah, and even things like, up until a few months ago, I don't know whether you've seen that post or something, but just to even get tickets for a concert, we had to ring up like a specialised phone line.
Yeah, I read about that, and it's actually a normal landline, which means sometimes you'd be kept on hold for like over 20 minutes and you have to pay for the cost of it.
Yeah, and there's certain songs that I'm sick of now because they have the same four songs, it's just not as hold music. Oh, it's funny. But now Ticketmaster are very thankfully, after integrating, being able to get our accessible tickets online, but we need to provide proof of disability, which, to be honest, happens in other countries anyway. Ireland is one of the few countries that didn't do it up to now.
And you've been obviously traveling, like you said, up and back to Scotland, is it? Have you been, how do you feel like Scotland is dealing with the whole kind of disability component, integrating people into society in a better, more inclusive way? Do you find, like, are they doing anything better in particularly? Have you been to any gigs over there?
Well, we were supposed to go to a few, and this is where I'm going to lead into the idea behind my blog, because I started this idea from just wanting to do it myself here, and we have two friends, Will and Rob, that live in England, so I've got them reviewing gigs over there for me as well, to get the wider perspective from each of the countries to see what can be improved specifically from each country. So say, take for example, what are we not doing that the UK are doing that we could be integrated into concerts and venues that I wouldn't be aware of, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. So have you noticed anything that you like that they're doing over there? Or what other countries have you been, actually?
My sister lives in London, so we went to Wembley Stadium for Ed Sheeran.
Yeah.
And that was pretty much the same as here.
Yeah, I actually seen the photo you posted with Ed Sheeran before, so you got to take a photo with him?
Yeah, that was that time that he was here for the Ruby Sessions.
Oh, lovely.
In Dial's Pub, and then he invited me back to meet him again because I was gone to his concert in October, so he was like, come back and meet me again.
That was awesome. I think that was like the highlight.
I like could not speak at all. I love Ed Sheeran, I'm obsessed, so literally all I did was like hug him 6 times.
He is unreal. He is so talented. Absolutely amazing.
And then the second time I was actually able to speak to him. So I actually gave him one of my reviews that I wrote about that Ruby Sessions gig. And he read it.
Oh, wow.
And I think like Imelda May's kids or something were in the room when he was just like standing there talking to me, looking at my review, and he saw me meeting them as well. I was like, they literally got 5 minutes. I got like a half an hour.
That's amazing. Lucky girl.
I got to do a lot of cool stuff like that.
Yeah, definitely. And who do you think, in terms of like, do you think artists talk enough about their kind of involvement with people with disabilities? Do you know any artists that you think are great kind of activists for that kind of thing? Are there any names out there that you want to mention? It's an interesting thing for me to think about, like, do you think artists mention this enough?
I definitely don't think it's mentioned enough, but I think it's purely because I think generally as people with disabilities, like, society doesn't really understand the struggles that we go through, primarily through lack of it, probably not being in the mainstream media as much. So I think if artists are made aware of it from meeting disabled fans like myself and stuff, that's how they get made aware of it. But everyone that I've met has been really nice and very open. And who have I met? Ed Sheeran twice, Gavin James twice. I met T once from Macklemore, which was really random.
That is random.
Basically, me and my brother went to see Macklemore in Phoenix Park, right?
Yeah.
And the way you have to go up, because for festivals and stuff, the wheelchair area is just like, it's like an assembled platform that gets put up.
Yeah.
So you have to go through, you have to kind of go through the backstage area a little bit to get to where the wheelchair spot is. I think they were coming out and it was bucketing down rain. And there was people that spotted him and he wasn't stopping, right? And then my brother was like, oh, will you get a picture of my sister? And he was like, yeah, I'm doing this, girl, then I have to go. But next of all, I looked, there's like a swarm of people just attacking him, trying to get a picture of him. I was like, what the hell? It was grand, it was fine, but it was really pretty funny.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's amazing. So you got your take, your best pick, kind of like before everybody else was kind of like, oh my god. Yeah.
And then Lucy Spraggan was good.
Amazing. Now, you know, let's kind of pull away a little bit from everything we've been talking about, because I feel like we touched a good bit upon that, and just learn a little bit about you. So you said you're studying digital marketing degree at the minute. What made you want to get into digital marketing? Tell us a little bit about that.
Very, very honestly, right? When I was in school, I loved business. Like, that was my really good subject in secondary school. And I was good at all the theory side of it, but I'm rubbish at maths.
So you wouldn't think it's to do with your maths teacher, no?
Probably, to be honest. But even still, so digital marketing had the less math component of any business course that was in that college. So that was a very heavy contributing factor to it. And as well as that, you know, I'm very active across my own social media. So yeah. I just like engaging with people. And I think something like in the area of social media and PR, I think would be quite good for me. Mm-hmm. Because that's particularly what I enjoy. Like, I remember towards the end of my first year of college, I went for a tour around Facebook HQ. Mm-hmm. And I loved it.
That's awesome. That's really, really cool. Really, really cool. And so, what do you enjoy like doing on a day-to-day basis? Like, what are your hobbies? What do you do for fun? You know, give us a little insight into the world of Niamh.
The world of me is something that constantly keeps going to new things. So obviously, normally, as I mentioned pre-COVID, I'm generally not here an awful lot. I split my time between being here. A lot of it is like seeing our friends that we don't generally get to see very often. And like, obviously, I've got my blog stuff and podcast stuff with Birdfire. That was like a really big thing. And then how that started was I joined Radio Society. Mm-hmm. In college.
Cool.
And I needed an idea for a show. Now, I'm quite an anxious person. So I was like, I can't do something where I just sit and look like I'm speaking to a wall for an hour. I need to be able to interview people.
Yeah.
Then I was like, I said to my friend, I was like, have we ever done live music before? And she was like, not for, like, we've done it, but not for a while. So I was like, I know a few musicians. Let me see how this works out. So then started that in February of my first year of college. That was something I loved. I was like leaving my classes just to sit in the studio. I had to be holding back to my classes.
That's how you know you're doing things that kind of make your soul happy, you know. That's good to hear. It's good that you find things that, you know, nourish you in that way, and you get that kind of positive interaction with the people of the world. And it's awesome. That's really awesome. That's one of my favorite things as well. I love that component. I'm passionate about digital marketing as well, so like, I can definitely relate to where you're coming from. You definitely seem like a people's person as well. Now, as well, on top of that, to our listeners that don't know this, you've been independently living for over 2 years now. How has that been for you, this journey?
To be honest, I'm used to it now, but at the very beginning, really tough, really, really tough.
What was the most challenging part, do you think, if you don't mind sharing with us?
Learning how to navigate my whole life myself, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because it was like, it was very, oh, you started college, but then this thing happens that results in me living on my own. Yeah. So it's all about finding the balance and not letting things drop. It feels a bit like you're juggling act at times.
Yeah. How do you uplift yourself in days when you're feeling low? What helps you to get back into a positive space?
To be honest, doing stuff like this, anything that's creative, like my blog or the podcast and stuff like that. I particularly like the podcast because unless I allow people to see that I'm disabled, they don't know.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's like there's no perception of the chair forced.
Yeah.
It's me first.
Yeah, I like that. Thank you for highlighting that, looking through the world through your eyes for a second. So thank you for that.
That's not me saying I'd ever hide my disability, because
I understand.
I've been given so many opportunities from having my disability, but it's nice to give people the opportunity to
for your ability as an interviewer and being a good host. Yeah, good to hear. Yeah. Niamh, we're going to jump into the part of the podcast, which is the I Am a Diva 5 question. So we're going to start with question number one. What's the best way for a diva to start her day?
Positive mental attitude on days that are tough. Start a day with one positive thought.
Great, great. Number two, what do you think the ultimate diva mantra is?
I'm going to say the one that I always say. Never be afraid to try, because everything that I've ever taken a stab in the dark at doing has always progressed me into doing something really fun and something that I really enjoy, and to be able to connect to people and travel all over the world and do loads of cool stuff.
That's awesome. Thank you. I think that's a very potent kind of phrase. Try, just try. Number three, what do you think the ultimate diva quality is above all others?
Determination.
Yeah.
Definitely. Because when you're disabled, you're in a very unique position where you kind of need to fight against things to get people to understand.
Yeah.
So it tends to be about how determined we are to achieve things that allows the world to be open to understanding us a bit more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Thank you. Thank you for that. Number four, can you describe your ultimate diva achievement to date?
Probably, to be honest with you, my podcast. That is like my child. It's the one idea that I came up with myself that catapulted me to be able to, well, obviously do things like this with you, first of all.
Yeah.
Meet a lot of new people, which you've also had in this podcast, like Runa and Kaylee Sousa and stuff, who've also been on my podcast too, but who've been very open-minded to my life since I've connected with them as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you get what I mean?
Yeah. That's awesome. And the reason for that, you know, which is why we're talking here today, I like that you highlighted that, you know, that, you know, it's you putting yourself out there and then interviewing other people that opens up the world of possibilities of getting interviewed. So awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
And last question of I'm a Diva 5 questions. What's your diva deal breaker in work or personal life?
Justin, this comes across both. Never letting anybody tell me no to anything. And I think that's what helped not only me, but my brothers and sisters as well. Everything that we've ever wanted to do, our parents enabled us to do. Before I started playing bocce for Ireland, I went in with the intent of wanting to make an international stage of it.
Yeah.
And I did. But the reason for that was because I wasn't told, oh, like, don't be stupid. It's like, we'll help you do what you want to do. Or, like, my sister has, like, a really good job as a teacher. Or my brother's a musician, and my other brother used to be a wrestler as well. So no dream of ours was ever perceived to be stupid.
Yeah, I'm really glad you grew up around a family like that. I think it's so important for your kind of roots growing up and kind of feeling grounded that's possible for you, because I think, you know, a lot of the kids that grow up and parents kind of like, no, you can't do that, you know.
Yeah.
You know, or pick a job that's going to pay well and not what's going to make you happy and stuff like that, and building that kind of mentality for your child. And then they think, why are they on antidepressants and why are they miserable every day of their life? And I don't think that's just an existence. So I'm really happy to hear that, you know, that you've been fortunate enough to
be honest as well. I think in the disabled community, that can happen without parents meaning for it to be, because sometimes people can kind of wrap their kids up in cotton wool because they're afraid to let out.
To kind of experience the world. Yeah.
When the worst thing that can possibly happen is if something doesn't work out right, you get told no and it makes your girl thicker skin. That's it.
Yeah.
You're learning life experience in the world.
You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And I think whether you have a disability or not, I think sometimes parents can be a little too protective, you know, in general. Yeah. And that just comes from the mentality of the parent. But like you said, it comes from a place of love, but it's not necessarily the best thing for them in the future, you know. Especially when, you know, the reality is our parents aren't going to be around forever, and we have to be able to learn to take care of ourselves and stand up for ourselves. Yeah, I guess me and you have that connection, and kind of that we both have lost our fathers and stuff like that. And I'm sorry to hear about that as well. And all my love goes out to you, and I definitely know what it's like. Now, to leave on a lighter note, and this is the way I like to always close my podcast, is with the question, what do you think the future is for females in the music industry with the way things have been looking? Where do you think it's heading?
With everything that I've been reading about female representation in the music industry, like through COVID at the moment, I think there's a lot of work to be done. But I think if we hold a united front as females, there's always opportunity for change in all aspects.
Anything in particular that you think can improve?
Basically, you just give us more of a mainstream voice.
Yeah.
Because even if you look at radio play. Somebody shared a statistic a while ago, and it was drastically, female radio play of new musicians was drastically lower.
Yeah, you're talking about the gender disparity report by Linda Coogan.
Yeah.
That was actually our first episode. Linda was in our first episode. So yeah.
Oh, really?
Yes. No, so take out season 2, episode 1. I understand what you're saying, the mainstream aspect, you're making a very fair point on that. Thank you so much for coming on to the show and sharing the different kind of angles to living with a disability, and then at the same time you are such an amazing strong female living the best life that you can, and you're always, like you said, you're determined, you're always putting your best foot forward, and you're putting yourself out there. So I really salute you and I respect you for that. You're an amazing person, an amazing soul, and thank you so much for coming on. To all our listeners, thank you so much for listening, and on top of that, all of Neve's socials will be in the description, her blog, you know, her podcast, everything else you need to know, and some other information if you want to learn about more into kind of the angle of music venues and people with disabilities and how you can support them a little bit better. Thank you so much to everyone listening. This was Edgy V, your talk show host, and until next time.
I'm a Diva podcast launched a Patreon account, so if you like what we do and want to support us, head over to our link and there will be some exclusive content for exclusive subscribers. So head over there now, and thank you so much for your support.